Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Director's Cut for this May 21st session, something, something or another. We've been doing this a while now.
Yes, we have.
Seth and James here with you, your host and program director, James J. Maloff, and my partner in art, our head of production, Seth Habager here. Seth, the mics are on. Let's have some fun.
Yes.
And let us welcome to the best audience in radio, to the WFHR stage, local author, playwright, Renaissance woman, Bria Ann Krieger.
Oh, hello, guys. Good to be back on.
Good to have you with us again, Bri. Thanks so much for joining us. I should journalistically let the audience know that Bria is my daughter, and I am very biased about her. But I have a good reason to be. She is incredibly talented, so it's not as if I'm just throwing this out there. She's very good, and we're going to talk about some of the projects that she has going on, let you know about how you can get into some of her work. But Bria, if you don't mind, just first up, how you doing? How have things been?
Oh, I'm doing good. I'm so happy the weather's getting nicer, can get outside more, and yeah, who couldn't be happier in Wisconsin right now?
Are you eating enough? Are you making sure you're eating enough? Is it warm in there? Do you need anything?
There he is. Yes, I'm eating enough.
All right. Just wanted to make sure. I wanted to dive into you something that you did last month that I thought was really cool with our friends at Mid-State Technical College. They had this Wisconsin Writers Connect event. Can you tell us about the event and how you were a part of it?
Yeah, I would love to. So the event that I was a part of was a writing contest called Write on the Money at the Stevens Point campus. And last summer, I got an email from one of the instructors, and she was friends with another instructor there that I'm friends with, if you can keep track of that. And she threw my name in the ring for being one of the judges for the writing contest. So I was a judge alongside another Wisconsinite author, and he's from the Green Bay area. His name is Lewis V. Clark III, and he's an indigenous writer, very talented, and he was so nice. So he judged the fiction essays, the personal essays, and I judged the research essays, which was a very interesting experience that I at first, I was like, am I qualified to do this? Is this something that I can do? But I quickly learned that I was qualified, and I was very honored to be a part of it.
Yeah, when it comes to the difficulty, what was difficult about it?
I guess just knowing, like, as a writer myself, how much work it takes to not only write an essay, but a research essay on top of that. And they're all finalists. I had 5 finalists to read through and kind of judge, and it was difficult just knowing how much hard work they all poured in and having to pick one overall that was the winner. And I did write a little letter to each contestant letting them know what I liked about their work so they didn't leave the contest empty-handed or discouraged, because they were all really great writers.
That sounds like something she would do.
Yeah.
Just, you know, from what I know about her, you know?
Thanks, guys.
You know, it's so important to be able to support each other, artists supporting artists. It's the purpose of this show. It's a lot of what we do here at WFHR. It's also part of the reason why you hear me back you so much, Bri, is because I know how much that means to you. And you do things like this, giving of your time and being a part of something like that. We don't know how much our reach stretches. We don't know how much we affect other people or how much just a simple comment can go so far. And I imagine that that letter taking that extra step goes a lot farther for those young writers. That's really cool to do, especially as a young writer.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I really hope that those letters brought a positive impact to them as well, because it can be discouraging not to win something that you were looking forward to, and, you know, after all the hard work and everything. So thank you for saying that.
I had a student couple weeks ago. Actually, it must have been a couple months ago. They didn't get an audition that they were in the running for. They didn't get a role that they were in the running for. They were the last person, down to two, and they didn't get it. And she's young, and she's really new in this business. And you could tell that she really felt she had this, that she had given everything she could, and it just didn't work out. And I was explaining to her, you know, my own career. And it that seemed to, you know, help a little bit and everything, but not that much. And I just loosely thought of how David Bowie got turned down by the Beatles. You know, the Beatles open Apple Records, have David Bowie's, like, you know, just sitting right there, his demo. And like, nah. Like, everybody has been in this situation like this. Stephen King was turned down by like 9 different
publishing companies.
Perseverance is your greatest, perseverance and perspective, I would say, are two of your best friends you can have as an artist.
I couldn't agree more, especially the perseverance piece, because like you were saying, some people don't make their quote-unquote big break until later in life. Like, wasn't it Morgan Freeman? He didn't start acting until he was, like, fairly older in the acting game, and now he's a household name and narrates, you know, everything.
Hugh Jackman's a great example, too, 43, 45, when he makes his big break. There's a number of those guys. I could tell you every one of them because I am in that right. So, I know very well every single one.
He's got to hold on to them real tight.
Oh, I got that list ready to go anytime you guys want it. Also, another part of this, too, that I imagine is important, Bria, certainly is the judging part. Now, I have never done anything like this. The closest I've ever come, the United Way has United We Can event every year where we loosely judge these sculptures. And even something loosely fun like that, I have a difficult
you're
time.
You're a mess.
I am. Like, the day beforehand, I'm like, I don't know. I want everybody to win. I'm not good at this stuff. You mentioned how that was difficult. What helped you make decisions? And certainly don't need specific details about the winners or anything, but just what won you over or what stood out to you? I think that might help young authors out there.
Oh, sure. Well, it was helpful that I had somewhat of a rubric that I could choose to follow if I wanted to, so that was a nice guideline. But then I kind of put it in perspective that these writers took the time to write this because they wanted to enter the contest, and therefore they wanted their work to be judged because they feel that it was adequate work. And they were. It was just some of them were either had a pretty grand opening that immediately caught my attention. I think that was a big one, having an opening that just immediately grasps you and you want to keep reading and you want to know what happens. I think that kind of gravitates towards any piece of writing that you're doing, whether it's a song or a play or a book.
Right on. Very well said. We're speaking with Breanne Krieger, local author and playwright, and a bunch of other things that her and I are working on, and she's working on, and plenty of other things to talk about. I want to talk about your projects coming up and some stuff that you already have out. We'll get to those in a moment. But first, what do you have in the fire right now, Bree?
Well, I am working on a young adult novel, and it's a new thing for me because it's young adult with a dash of low fantasy, and I've never worked with fantasy before, but I'm pretty excited about it.
That's cool.
That's very cool.
Are you how far along are you in the process?
I am on chapter 10, so it's getting there. It's still like a little baby book, but it'll be growing up soon.
You know, I think a lot of writers, I think a lot of creatives can relate to, I start said project and, oh yeah, I forgot about that. That was 4 or 5 years ago. I should pick that up again. Like, we tend to get squirrel, you know, we get a little sidetracked with other projects and everything. How do you stay focused on the task at hand?
Well, I am definitely guilty of the squirrel complex because I have a lot of different projects going on in my head.
I'm afraid you might have, that might be my fault. Yeah. I apologize for that.
No, I'm just kidding. But I feel like a lot of authors go, any creative goes through that quote-unquote issue. But I try to focus on one project at a time and think, well, as soon as I get done with this project, it'll feel so good, and then I can move on to that thing I'm really excited about.
I like that. Mm-hmm. I like that approach, too, and I think that's relatable for a lot of people. I did want to mention your work that is already released that other people can take in. I certainly am reading a lot of it myself. We were talking on Friday to Terry Johns, and she was mentioning how she's reading your book. I never danced. How can people get your work, Bria?
Well, it is available at the library. That book, I've Never Danced, is available at the Wisconsin Rapids location and the Stevens Point location. So if you can't afford the book, you can always check it out.
Nice.
But if you would like to buy a copy, it's available for paperback on Amazon, and it's available in hardcover through Barnes & Noble online, and that's under B.A. McCrae.
I love this kid. I so many artists would have taken that moment. Well, you can buy it at, and that's all they would have given you. But she's such a believer in libraries and reading, yeah, and just getting the work in people's hands. Mm-hmm. I admire that. I appreciate that. And I do, as her father, though, I will tell you, buy the book. Buy the book, people. Buy the book. You can, if you have to, go ahead and rent it, sure, but eventually buy the book. And buy all of her books.
Thank you. Yeah, I love advocating for libraries. They're so amazing, and I actually have a little project in the works collaborating with the library to get one of my ebooks, The World Ends Christmas Day, in the digital library. So I believe it would be able to be checked out by anybody in the state of Wisconsin as long as they have a library card. So we shall see. That'll be a couple months in the works because it takes time, but I'm pretty excited about that.
That is exciting.
That's very exciting.
That's very cool.
Awesome.
If you don't mind, Bria, I would like to let the audience in on a little something that you and I are working on. And we don't have to get too into the weeds on this one or anything, but Bria approached me about a script idea, a play idea that her and I could do. And it started with... I think you had seen chapter 2.
Yeah.
And you messaged me after that telling me about the show and that what you liked about it and everything, and then saying how you had the idea that it would be great for you and I to do a play together, which I can't tell you what that means to me, and I don't have the words. I'm not as good of a writer as you. And the thought came to you of, well, okay, I'm going to look for a play of a daughter and son, or I mean a dad and daughter or something like that. When you couldn't find anything that really worked, you had the thought of, well, why don't I just write something? And I love that thought. I love that you took that ball and ran with it. And I hope others are encouraged by it, because that is the essence of creativity. It also is huge nowadays, where representation is so vital and so important, but yet we don't have enough of it yet. That's why, to young writers out there, to writers in general out there, I express, hey, you have those thoughts, run with it. It doesn't have to be already written. Like, it doesn't have to be something that's already done. It may be something that needs to be done. And I appreciate that. The project that you and I are working on, actually, we're going to be getting together tomorrow, Monday, to discuss and go over. So just a reminder to both of us that we have a coffee date tomorrow. And we have to focus on writing, okay? Her and I get together, we ramble, and we talk about a million things. So we got to focus on the task at hand.
Get to work now, yes, you yes, two. Yes. Get to work, man.
Especially because I know how good this project's going to be, and I cannot wait to do it with you. I'm looking forward to it. And how is it going on your end? I know that I'm working on tinkering on some things on mine.
Yeah, well, that's exciting to hear, and I'm excited to swap notes and everything. Well, you know that I had started the script, and I was really excited about it, and then the program crashed, and I lost the script, so I'm gathering some fragments and pieces and putting them back together and everything, but like you and I kind of discussed, it's the silver lining is that then we get to create it together instead of separately and then coming together, so... It happened for a reason, I suppose.
I didn't want to put you on the spot with that, but I do really appreciate you sharing that, because that is devastating for a writer. It's devastating for a creative. I have very few times seen a devastated look on Seth's face, and he felt like every bit of that.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. And I think, not trying to guess here, but I guess you've been through something like that too.
I have had experiences like that, and it's I appreciate what you're talking about right now, because the first thought for me, I think, and for like a lot of people, is like, I can't do that again.
Yep.
I did it, and I guess I can't do it again. Yeah. And so picking it up again is I have to give you guys full credit for that, because that's a hard thing to do.
Yeah, I really do admire it, hon. And I think that's something that perseverance, again, that we come back to that word, where it's there are so many people out there that have creative all day. And even way better talented than some of the people we already see and read and all that. The difference of them and the people that don't make it is perseverance. It is just having no other no other speed. I've joked about this before. Any breaks I've had or anywhere, anything that you think I've done with my career, it talent, those kind of things do come into play. I don't think I deserve credit. I don't know anything better. I don't know another speed. The only way I'm making it, the only way I'm getting anywhere in life is by just knowing one speed and just going for it. I'm not saying that's the only way to do it, but I don't know that I can necessarily take credit for that when I don't know any better. It's the only thing I know.
Exactly.
I don't think that there you have to be that crazy to be that way. You could have a good balance like Bria does. But there is that drive that has to be there. You have to have that fire. And one of the toughest things for an artist, especially when you are just starting out, is you are in charge of that fire. You have to keep it going, and you are also the only one that can really diminish it. It may feel like other people can with, you know, comments and different things like that, but it is, at the end of the day, it is you that keeps that fire lit and going. Those kind of things can derail you. I admire and I appreciate talking about it to let other people know, hey, other people have been through this. All three of us have been through this, and many others out there. And you got to pick up that pen and keep going.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And thank you, Seth, for saying that. And that was a really good analogy. I could see it in my head. And you are a good writer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he is. I think we right here is a good spot to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
We'll do that, and we'll come back and catch up a little bit more with Bria Ann Krieger, our guest today on Director's Cut. Welcome back to Director's Cut, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us. Whatever day of the week it is that you're listening to this, whether it's live and direct or on the podcast, we greatly appreciate you doing that. Remember that you can get the podcast at civicmedia.us. You can also catch us streaming 24/7 there and WFHR.com. Spread the word about it, baby.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of some of the stuff that we have already, Bria, when we're talking about a creative and some of the work that you've done, one of the things that is a little bit in the other direction but does have the creative elements to it is you officiate weddings. We've touched on this once before, but just for the audience that may have not heard, where did this idea come from? It doesn't seem like something that would just fall out of the sky. It was something that spoke to you in some ways.
Yeah. So I think I came up with the idea when I was, I don't know, I had to be like 18 or something like that. And I just thought, oh, I'm going to put it on my bucket list that I would like to just become ordained so I could officiate a wedding if I wanted to. I probably saw something on TV or somebody who did like a last minute wedding or something, and I thought that was quirky, so I wanted to do it. And when I was in college, my classes got canceled randomly one afternoon, and I was feeling on top of the world, and a friend of mine said, well, what's something on your bucket list? Like, let's cross it off. And I said, oh, we've wanted to be ordained. And they were ordained, actually, so they showed me the website, and I got ordained, and then I didn't get the paperwork and stuff. I didn't order it until 2020, and then I posted a Facebook post about it, and then I got two requests from classmates that they were getting married within the next year, and they needed an officiant, so that is when my career started.
It's pretty cool. I think.
Hold up. We just glossed over something here.
Yeah.
She's not even 18, and she has a bucket list already.
I know. Yeah, you're so right.
What kind of an overachiever are you? Come on now.
Old soul.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't even have a bucket list.
I know. I feel as soon as she said that, I immediately like, man, I should get a bucket list together. I should probably do that. That's right. So I think for some people, when they think of ordaining, in officiating weddings, you immediately think of religious incantations or thoughts and stuff. But while you are spiritual, that's not where that came from. You, like your father, are a foolish romantic as well.
Yep, you got that right.
I think that's pretty unique. I think that's a cool place for that to stem from and everything.
Thank you.
How many weddings have you officiated so far?
I've done 5 since 2020.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah.
And this is something you're still looking to do more of? Can people reach out to you if they want to have you officiate it?
Yeah. I mean, I am open to it as long as I've got that date open, then they seem like nice people.
We're about to talk about movies in a moment here, and I can't think of many things that are much more of a movie scenario than me getting married again. But if I were to,
Dark comedy are you writing?
Right?
Man?
Yeah. I'm not doing my journalistic duty if I don't ask these hard questions, Bria. So I have to ask you, if I were to get married, would you want to officiate it, or would you rather be in the stands and everything with the crowd?
I think I'd be offended if you didn't ask me to officiate.
Oh, nice.
Your wedding.
Nice. Good to know. Good to know. Very good. Making a mental note. Making.
Don't you forget, man.
I apologize. I feel a little mean asking that on the air, but I had to. I had to ask.
I think you knew the answer to that one, though.
But I like it.
Yeah.
But speaking of movies, Bria, of course, a movie fan, as Seth and I are and everything, and we like talking movies a little bit when we can. We get into some pretty fun stuff and heavy topics from time to time. Every once in a while, I like to throw things out there just for fun. And I love the idea that Seth had when we were first creating Director's Cut of movie suggestions from the audience. We want the audience to suggest a movie to us. Seth and I will review it and put it out there for everybody. We've gotten a couple of things since, and we'll see when we have time to get into some of those. But we're always looking for more and always looking for more feedback, and certainly for guest ideas and things like that from you out there. So please feel free to reach out to Seth or I for that. James@mailoff@civicmedia.us. Seth@WFHR.com. You know, any of these will work.
Mm-hmm.
Reach out to us. This next topic I thought was fascinating, though, and I have not been able to stop thinking about it. And I've had this for like at least 2-3 months in the back burner. Movies with the perfect cast. I think it's a fun topic, especially because there's almost no wrong answers. This is an opinion thing. This is a thing that, each one of us are going to have different answers and different perspective on this. And I think that's what's so much fun about art, about movies, is that one person, there are people out there that think Ishtar is one of the greatest movies ever made. There's people out there that will think a bomb is something that is great, and vice versa. So that's, I think, one of the beauties of this thing. So we're not talking necessarily about, box office success or even a good movie necessarily, as you'll see with some of these examples. Sometimes it could be a perfect cast with a horrible direction or bad script or something like that. So let's go ahead and get into this. I have a list of 10 here from BuzzFeed that we'll get into. But do you want to go through the list and then mention some that maybe weren't on the list? Do you guys have any top of the mind that come to head?
Well, I personally think we should throw, if we have any out, let's do that right now. And I can start. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
The first movie that jumped to my brain was Sneakers.
Oh, my man. Yes. Yes.
That is, every single person in that movie was brilliantly cast. It's kind of an ensemble piece, too. It's got a lot of really big name actors in it. Robert Redford, Ben Kingsley, and then the rest of the cast.
I got it right in front of me.
Yeah.
Hey, Bria, have you seen this movie, Sneakers?
No, I haven't, but just hearing the cast, it sounds like a good movie.
Oh, it gets better.
Robert Redford, Sidney Poitier, River Phoenix, Dan Aykroyd, Sir Ben Kingsley, Mary McDonald, David Strahan, Timothy Busfield is in it, James Earl Jones, Donald Loggia is in it. There is just an incredible cast with this. And what I love about that movie, first, it's seeing Redford and Sidney Poitier work together. I have goosebumps right now when I think about it. It's so awesome to see.
I think was that the only movie they worked together on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was a humongous fan of River Phoenix's, and as somebody who really loved his work, and I would say that My Private Idaho is probably his best performance, maybe. But in this movie, you've got nothing but legends. And River Phoenix hangs with all these guys. Yes. And after his passing, Sidney Poitier, Robert Redford went out of their way to come out and talk about working with him and how great he was on set and how humble he was and how he was just taking everything in. I miss him. And I was so looking forward to seeing River Phoenix as an old man do it, being an actor. So it's another good reason to see that one. Nice reference. Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, good choice, man. Oh, it's going to be hard to top that one for me.
Everyone needs to go out and watch that movie.
Yes.
It's just a fun movie.
Yeah. I don't say it as, this is one of the greatest movies of all time. But
no.
Sometimes a movie just needs to be fun.
Exactly.
And it is definitely that.
Yep.
Bria, do you have anything that comes to mind?
Yeah, I made a quick little list, but it's hard to pick one to start out with.
Oh, sure, yeah.
I think for a classic and You'll probably won't be surprised that I'm saying this, but When Harry Met Sally, I love that movie, and it always feels like a classic because all of the parts, it's just one of those movies where it's so well casted that you forget you're watching a movie.
Good choice.
That's a great point, too. For me, because it's similar, if you get a performance that's good enough from an actor, you forget that they're this famous person, and you get totally absorbed in the thing. So I totally understand what you're saying there. Yeah, it's cool.
Nice choice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Mine is one that I've mentioned a couple of times, the movie Heat from Michael Mann.
Oh, yeah.
That movie released back in 95. To me, it's if somebody asks me, it's not my favorite movie, but if you ask me a perfect movie, to me, Heat is perfect. It's in part because it's not the greatest movie you'll ever see or any of these things. It's a crime drama. It's a crime story. But what it is to me, is somebody who dissects this stuff insanely and everything. Everything from the editing, the sound, the directing, the script, everything is at a 10. Everything is 10 for 10. And it starts with that cast. The cast includes Xander Berkeley and Michaela Williams. You've got Ted Levine in there, Tone Loke. You have Henry Rollins and Hank Azaria, all in these small roles. Danny Trejo as well, John Voight, William Fincher, Jeremy Piven. But then you have a very young Natalie Portman. You have Tom Sizemore. You have Ashley Judd. And, of course, you have the main three, Robert De Niro, Al Pacino, Val Kilmer, who work immensely together. If you are ever wondering what is he talking about with chemistry, what does he mean? Do me a favor and sit back and watch the diner scene from Heat.
Yep.
It is... And for my money, it may be the greatest scene I've ever seen. It may be my favorite scene of all time, if I had to really be pressed, in part because they're two of my favorite actors of all time, two people I've looked up to my whole life. But it's done in one take. These guys had never worked together on screen.
Yeah, they were never on screen together. This was the first time they had ever done it.
They didn't have a chance to do the read through together because of scheduling conflicts. So this is literally like maybe the first time that they're doing, certainly the first time with a camera rolling, but maybe the first, maybe second time that they've actually read this together. And it's like watching Michelangelo paint. It's watching these guys work and everything, and just talking about it like gets me emotional. It's such a silly thing because it's a crime drama. It's not something that it really hits the heart necessarily. But I watched that scene, and it just I have to watch it multiple times because I'm too caught up in the dissecting it.
Yeah, and the thing about it. Okay, so Al Pacino, you know, has the reputation of overacting. You know, going 100 miles an hour all the time, kind of thing. The subtlety of these two guys, if you don't know the plot of the movie, Al Pacino plays the cop who's chasing the robber, who is Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And this is they meet for the first time. They've been chasing one guy's been chasing the other guy for years. So they meet in neutral ground at a thing. Yeah. I mean, the tension in that scene, you can cut with a knife.
Yeah.
And it's some of the most nuanced acting for both of them. But mostly Al Pacino, he does an amazing job just of how restrained he is in that scene.
And I appreciate you mentioning that too, because with that scene in particular, it's the only time in his career that I've seen Al Pacino do that. I've never seen him do that before. And nobody, I mean, it's harder to find a scene Al Pacino wasn't good in than to, you know, mention all the scenes that he was good in. I mean, the guy's got quite the IMDb page.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting in that scene, though, to see that side of him. And I don't think that happens with any other actor. I think it's only De Niro that happens with.
But don't worry. There's plenty of other times in the movie where he's, you know, what do we got?
He is definitely losing his mind in a couple of scenes of that. I'm going to take a quick pause right here. We'll be back with more. Our guest, Bria Ann Krieger, on Director's Cut. And we're back with Director's Cut. Seth and James here behind the mics. We are being joined by a local author and Renaissance girl, Bria Ann Krieger. So before we get into the top 10, there are some outliers, some honorable mentions. I wanted to throw Clue out there from the 1980s.
Oh, my God.
That was the second movie.
I love that movie so much. That is a great honorable mention.
Bria and I joke all the time that we're so much alike. I've said before, I've never met anybody in my life that I'm more alike than her and vice versa and stuff. Bria, Seth and I share a brain, so that means that you and him also are going to share part of that brain.
Close.
Just to let you know. Just to let you know. So you had Clue on your list too, Seth?
I did. Yeah.
That's funny.
Tim Curry can just do no wrong.
Oh my gosh.
It's one of those movies, man. Yep. It starts and ends with Tim Curry, certainly. Yes. You can't mention Clue and not mention Tim Curry. But Madeline Kahn is one of my favorite actors of all time, mm-hmm. and I love her performance in that. Michael McKean, also a sneaky good performance. Christopher Lloyd, Martin Mull, Elaine Brennan, who never gets any credit, Elaine Brennan, but yes, such a good actor.
Great, yep.
Just a great cast. Such a good cast. That's a good one. Let's see here. Also, a couple of pretty good mentions here. The Devil Wears Prada. Now, I don't remember that movie that well, but Meryl Streep, Emily Blunt, Anne Hathaway. Oh, Stanley Tucci, too.
You gotta watch that movie again. It is brilliant.
It's one of those movies I don't think I completely saw. Otherwise, mm-hmm. I feel like I would remember it a lot better. I would feel very similar to a lot of people on it.
Meryl Streep's performance in that is very against type for her, and she pulls it off just brilliantly. Brilliant.
I think
she really did.
Yeah.
One of the greatest movies that I have seen in the last 20 years, by far and away. And when it comes, I don't like recommending movies very often, but if I'm going to recommend a movie, it's one of the top five that I will recommend, is a wonderful British movie, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. It is based on an amazing book. It's from 2011. If you like spy movies, if you like drama like that, like espionage and all that, it is tailor-made for you. And, oh, yeah, it has maybe the greatest British casting of all time. You've got John Hurt, Toby Jones, Benedict Cumberbatch, Tom Hardy, Mark Strong, Colin Firth, and, of course, my main man, Gary Oldman, leading the whole cast. Gary Oldman's top five favorite actors of all time for me. I've studied his whole career. It may be his singular performance. The Professional or the more recent one he's done are maybe up there. Mm-hmm. But this one is a sneaky one for me of like, my God, this man is still great at what he does. This is like his 30th film or whatever, and he's still learning and getting better. Mm-hmm. Such a good movie.
Nice.
So it's one of the best scripts I've ever seen, too. Let us take a look here. They also have The Departed in this list. You kind of have to.
Oh, I was going to mention that one, too.
I think The Departed is a little overrated to me, the movie itself, mm-hmm. the script itself. Not the acting, though. Not the acting. It's still the only movie I've ever seen where you go from one scene to the next. We've all seen like eclectic movies with big casts and everything. It's the only movie I've ever seen where you go from one scene to the next, from A-list to A-list actor to A-list actor to legend to A-list actor. Like, there's no scene where there's not a bona fide A-list superstar in that scene.
Yeah.
I've never seen a movie like that before where you're going from Damon to Leonardo DiCaprio to Jack Nicholson to just, you know, so on and so on. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Yep.
Really good film. I like this one that's mentioned here, especially because we don't think about this very often. Guardians of the Galaxy comes up at number 8 on this list.
I was wondering if we were going to get to any superhero movies, and I hadn't thought about that, but I think they got something there.
Yeah.
There's not any role that I can think of that would be better with another person.
Yeah, Bria, are you familiar with this one?
Yeah, I haven't. To be honest, I haven't seen a whole lot of the movies, but like Seth was saying, I can't imagine anyone else playing those roles. It's almost like those actors were molded around the role itself.
One of my old colleagues, Bob Look, I actually feel like put this best, and Bob's not an actor or anything mm-hmm. like that, but he loves movies and he likes this stuff. And Bob told me once the way he can tell an actor's good is if he can imagine anybody else in that role.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really cool. I thought that was a really good way to put it. Yeah. And for me, I'm with you guys on this. Like, I can't picture anybody else in any of these roles. It's certainly the main four, the main five, whatever. Mm-hmm. Really well done. Bradley Cooper doesn't get enough credit for his voice acting. I'm such a big Bradley Cooper guy, and I love his voice work in those movies. It's part of the reason why I continue to watch them. I like the superhero stuff and everything, but I more so watch it for a certain character or a certain actor. Mm-hmm. And with those, knows it's him for me. But this is actually going back to a callback, because something Seth and I have talked about quite a bit, and I like bringing attention to, is what really changed the game with the superhero movies. Yeah, the special effects, yeah, the budgets got better, a lot of these things caught up. Audiences, those young audiences like Seth and I that grew up reading comic books and are old enough mm-hmm. to go to movies and, you know, those kind of things. It's the casting. It's the casting that really did this. It's the big thing. It's the biggest thing. Casting, you got Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange. You have arguably the greatest actor in the world right now playing a superhero character. And not just, it's not just like they're collecting a paycheck. They are all in. They believe in these characters. He treats it the same way he did in Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, or any other character.
I love it when he's they're doing out, you know, acting in cities, and he's in full costume and he goes into a comic shop.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You could tell he wouldn't do that if he wasn't having fun with it.
Yeah. It's a great balance of these. You could tell these guys are having fun while also being professional about it and treating these roles right. It goes back to something that I learned about the original Star Trek. And watching episodes of that, and there was something different about it, because I didn't grow up on that stuff. I've been watching them later in life. Mm-hmm. And watching those episodes, and like, well, what is it? What is it that I can't put my finger on? And I read an interview with William Shatner where he talked about the first day on set, everybody had a huddle and a meeting, like, we're going all in. We're going to believe this stuff. Where, yeah, does it seem fakey and hokey or whatever? Doesn't matter. This is Shakespeare. We're treating this professionally. We're going to treat this with... And if they believe it, the audience is going to believe it that much more. Mm-hmm. It's part of the reason why you will never see me in a wig on stage. It's the silliest thing I know, and plenty of actors do it and pull it off. But for me, it's one more thing that isn't me. And that makes it that much harder for me to believe that character. And even a tenth of a percentage that I'm not believing in that character, that gives a little wiggle room for the audience not to believe. Mm-hmm. And again, like everything else we do, it comes back to the audience. I admire that with these superhero roles.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty cool that they're able to do that. Harry Potter gets on this list at number 7. Pretty hard to argue that one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about that Daniel Radcliffe. Like, yeah. No, Daniel Radcliffe's amazing.
I've heard from, I'm not a Potter guy myself, but I've heard from fans that they're like, yeah, no, this was excellently cast.
Yeah.
Especially with the child actors, because you never know what you're going to get when you first cast them. And they're like, okay, we're going to be putting these guys in 8 movies or however many it was. And it's like, so you better make a good choice at the beginning.
Yeah, I don't think, not that I can think of, that any of the members were recasted throughout the series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think so.
Dumbledore, certainly, because they had to.
Yeah,
right.
I'm nitpicking. I hear what you're saying.
But then they picked the perfect guy to replace him.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, they did. Right. Yeah, I think we think of those main core actors. You know, Robbie Coltrane as Hagrid or mm-hmm. something like that. But I'm also thinking of all the actors that came in for like one, you know,
a one-off
movie
roles,
or something.
Yeah.
Again, Gary Oldman as Sirius Black. You know, when I read the book, that's who Sirius was. And Gary Oldman did an amazing job of it.
Kenneth Branagh, come again.
I was going to say. Yeah, it's a great one. Dame Maggie Smith is in this.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
She's so good.
It's perfect.
So good. I would watch literally anything that woman would do. Yeah. a more recent entry, Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I haven't seen it yet, but it sounds so, I mean, the casting sounded like they were, again, right spot on.
It really is perfectly cast. It's another one of those movies where one less member and it's just not the same.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it yet, Brie?
No, I haven't, but ever since I just saw a snippet of the Oscars, and I believe that they won, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
They swept the Oscars.
They won everything.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, I really want to see it, though. It looks incredible.
Really nice performance by James Hong. If you like acting and you haven't studied James Hong, then you don't know acting.
Yeah, exactly.
James Hong's career is bigger than anybody's. I can't think of one actor that can compete with his IMDb page.
Ridiculous number of stuff he's been in?
700 films or something like that. Like it's insane how many movies that man's done. And done it all with class. Mm-hmm. You know, at a time when he first started where his people were not treated with class.
No.
It's so cool to see him at this point in his career get to play a role like this and see the critical acclaim that came to this movie that he can take some pride in. He can take some, you know, what a long, great career, and to have this kind of at the end of it and everything is so beautiful. That's a script right there.
You know it.
Jamie Lee Curtis, I think, is probably the weakest link in this movie, and that's saying something because she does a good job, mm-hmm. and she won an Oscar for it.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm not saying that in begrudging as a diss to her. I'm saying as a compliment to Michelle Yao, who is one of Seth and I's favorites.
Makes everything better.
Yes,
that she's
does.
In.
She really does. I love her so much.
Yep.
Ki-Hoi Kwan, mm-hmm. Who we have not seen in a long time. And his buddy is directing and, you know, doing this film and reaches out to him like, hey, I got the right part for you. And Ki was not going to do this. He's like, I don't know. I'm done with acting. I'm not sure or anything. He gets in there, and you see him in this performance, and his character is so well-rounded, and you get to see so many different angles of his character. And I can't think of a better actor to play that part, even mm-hmm. though I know that there are a lot of actors out there with so-called, you know, better resumes or, you know, have a note more of a name that could have brought people to it. Mm-hmm. They take a chance. They cast him, and look what happens.
Wow.
You know?
Magic.
It's pretty incredible and a yeah. great movie. I again, don't like to recommend movies very often. If you have a child, if you are a parent, or if you are a child, which I would imagine is 90% of the audience, you're going to love this movie. Right. It's going to pull you in. Number five, which I think should have been higher, Pulp Fiction.
From Boy. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe I didn't write that on my list.
I'm with you. I was mad at myself immediately. Yes.
And that's the one I love. The thing I love about the casting for that one is the smaller roles mm-hmm. that kind of yes. appear, you know, that kind of just kind of pop up and
Bruce
then kind of go down. Yeah. That's it. But even like your Steve Buscemi as
that's
your waiter
like, yeah.
or, you know, or the
Harvey Keitel.
Eric Stoltz or something like that. Those small little roles. They were all so good. It was. Yeah.
The only bad acting is by Quentin Tarantino, actually. Like, it's the only thing. Like, well, the man can't act. He's just not a good actor.
No,
but otherwise, every other role is perfectly cast. I remember being in the theater seeing it, and at the end, when they bring in the, you know, the cleaner, the fixer, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call him, it's Harvey.
Wolf, yeah.
It's the wolf, and it's Harvey Keitel. And I'm like, yeah, of course it's Harvey Keitel. Who else would it be? Like, there's literally nobody else that could do that part. What I also like about this being added on there is, again, the chances. I think there's a lot I could say, you know, 50-50 on Quentin Tarantino. But one of the things I do admire and I do appreciate about him is he is not going to be bullied. If he believes that this is the right person, whether it's Quentin when he's first starting out with Pulp Fiction or whatever his last movie, quote unquote, last movie is going to be, he's going to go with it. And he had to fight to get Travolta in that role. He had to fight even more for Samuel Jackson, which a lot of people forget. Mm-hmm. That you can't have two other characters. There's only the two guys that can play it, and it's those guys.
Mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. it's uncanny how well they work together. I mean, it's not like they're in a lot of scenes together.
No,
more than some of the others, but it's kind of an ensemble piece. So yeah, but every time they're on the screen together, it's like so good.
The Big Lebowski comes in at number three on this list.
Oh, my
God. That's a pretty tough one to argue. That's a pretty perfect cast.
I'm going to give the Coen brothers credit because they're good at this in almost every single movie. They you know, I think the one that really stands out to me is Hail Caesar.
Yes.
With Josh Brolin as the magnate, you know, the Hollywood guy.
Yes, yes.
And I didn't think until he was brilliant. Oh, my goodness, was he brilliant in that. Mm-hmm. But if you need to pick a, you know, any of the Big Lebowski's probably their best in terms of cast. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know this one, Brie?
Yeah, I can't imagine anybody else playing the dude except for his name escapes me. But
Jeff Bridges.
Totally
Jeff Bridges.
Agree.
Yeah. So we talked about this already a little bit about that you can't picture anybody else in the role. I don't think there's any casting in that movie I can picture anybody else. Mm-mm. From Peter Stormare, who is one of my favorite character actors of all time, mm-hmm. underrated, underappreciated. Even Flea's performance is great, and Flea's an underrated actor. But I'd forgotten. I had to pull it up just to double check to make sure if I had this right. Not only is Philip Seymour Hoffman in it, which I'd forgotten about, David Huddleston. Who was another great character actor mm-hmm. who does a great job in it. Mm-hmm. You got Sam Elliott coming in at the end.
The narrator,
just sneaking in there. With, you know, you know he's the narrator, but his on-screen performance was really cool.
Yeah.
Julianne Moore is a we adore her. We love her work and everything. And, of course, my man John Turturro shows up in there as well. Great performance by
great
him.
One.
But when we're talking about the main three, Buscemi, Goodman, and Bridges, mm-hmm. there's nobody else that could play those roles. There's no. How bad do you feel me even just saying those names and you immediately feel bad for Donnie? Like, you've got to, like, right, immediately. Oh, didn't we all feel bad for Dottie? Even though we love, we laughed at it. Every time Goodman say, they're saying something, we're laughing at it. We still feel bad for him. That's the power of Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, that's right.
It's a good one.
Yeah.
And there's two more on this list I want to get to. Do we need to take a break or should we go ahead and run right through? Let's run right through. Number two on this list, and this is a really interesting one. And I'll admit, part of the reason we're doing this whole thing is because of number two on this list.
Okay.
Popeye from 1980. Now, this is one of those rare cases where movie magic didn't exactly happen on the screen, even though it was perfect casting. It wasn't a box office sensation, and there are many people that will tell you it derailed Shelley Duvall's career, and it could have derailed Robin Williams' career. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the talent of Robin Williams at level where he's almost undeniable, you have to cast him. Mm-hmm. This could have shut his career down.
Yep.
Like it could have been a very different path for Robin Williams had this movie like really stayed on his career. Mm-hmm. But you go back, and I don't care who you can name me any name in the world. There is not a better person to play Popeye than Robin Williams, and there is not a better actor to play Olive Oil than Shelley Duvall. You can name me. I think Jodie Foster is my favorite female actress of all time. Jodie Foster couldn't play that role, like not as
not
good
really.
As Shelley Duvall.
No.
Like it's perfectly cast.
I'm totally with you. Which is interesting because it's so high on the list. But
yeah.
It's considered generally to be like one of the bigger bombs of history.
Yes.
I mean, what you said about Shelley Duvall, Robin, you know, luckily was able to do that. Robert Altman didn't make a movie for 8 years after that.
That's right.
Because of how bad it was
received. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's a really good point, man. Yeah. Also, great performances by Linda Hunt and Ray Walston in it as well.
Ray Walston was can we praise Ray Walston? One of my all-time favorite character actors. One of the best. One of the best of all time.
Really is. Really was. I'm not going to tell people you have to go out and see it, but if you haven't seen it, maybe watch a scene or two and see what we're talking about.
It's
no,
fun.
It's not.
It's fun. It's a fun movie. It really is.
Now, I'm surprised by this one for a number of reasons at number one on the list.
Okay.
True Grit from 2010. Interesting to me because not only to see a remake get the number one spot, mm-hmm. but to see True Grit up there and not the original. Because I thought the original was, perfectly cast. And I think you could have gone with either one of these. I don't begrudge the remake, but I do think the original is perfectly cast. You're going to be hard-pressed to find a better cast than that one for especially that movie. And I know
that
this isn't
really interesting.
This is a movie from 1969, so I'm not expecting everybody to be able to pull right off the top of their head the cast.
Right.
But you have Jeremy Slate does a great performance, another great character actor. By the way, Dennis Hopper is in this. Glenn Campbell is in that movie.
Glenn Campbell, of all people.
But it really goes to the top two. Kim Darby, her performance in the original True Grit is legend. It's so beautiful, and it's the only time I believe in the great career of John Wayne that you get a chance to truly see some heart. Now, in The Cowboys, you see a little bit of it, mm-hmm. but in True Grit, you get the true identity of John Wayne. John Wayne's not acting all that hard in that movie. A lot of that movie is John Wayne, he didn't do that a lot. John Wayne was a thespian. A lot of people don't like to say that or call him or look at him that way. He was a thespian, people. He just may have not necessarily been your definition of a thespian, not a method actor or any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of the few times, and I only know all this because my mother's the biggest John Wayne fan in the world, which throws everybody for a loop, not the person you would expect. But with watching all of his movies growing up, this one I always stood with me as a kid. My favorite movie of his is The Cowboys, but this was the movie that stood out to me that showed, The Shootist. Actually, The Shootist is probably my favorite of his. But in this one, you see him really, like, he cares about this person. He cares about this kid. And John Wayne, kind of notoriously known as hating people. Like, just not a person that liked
a lot of grouch.
People. Yeah,
kind of
grouch.
A grouchy guy.
But man, Kim talks about it and everything and how hands-on he was and working with her and staying late and all these things and stuff. And then you see it on screen. You see the care. The remake that they're talking about, Jeff Bridges, Haley Steinfeld, Matt Damon, Josh Brolin, really good cast.
Again, another great cast. And again, that's the Coen brothers again, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, it is. The remake, yes. I want to make sure. I'm kind of surprised. There's a couple that I thought of while we're doing this. The Princess Bride. Was not on there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I can't think of a movie that's even more brilliantly cast.
Just
for the chances they took for a couple of things. You know, Andre the Giant, never acted before in his life, pulls off one of the great acting surprises in, I think, Hollywood history.
Yes.
Everyone, you know, your guy Mandy Patinkin, of course, Cary Elwes, maybe because they're not quite as famous as some of the other movies we talked about, you know, the actors. Robin Wright, you know, I mean, still every single role in that, you know, Wallace Shawn.
Yes. you have a ton of great actors in small roles. You have Carol Kane, Billy Crystal, you know, doing it. You never had it so good.
Yeah.
Wallace Shawn, the great Wallace Shawn that people still quote. People know the quote, but they don't know the guy's name.
Isn't that sad?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's Wallace Shawn, man.
Chris Sarandon, who I don't give enough credit to, but so good in the bad guy roles, such a good villain, so darn good.
Both him and Christopher Guest in that one are
Thank you for mentioning Christopher Guest.
But that's why I was kind of surprised that wasn't. And then even the grandfather and the grandson, Fred Savage and Peter Falk. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
And everybody's
favorite. That was a good
mention,
Seth.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Cary Elwes. I have nothing to say other than Cary Elwes. Yeah. I just wanted to say his name. Do you have any honorable mentions that have come to mind, Bria?
Yeah, I was thinking of, you know, when we were talking about we can't imagine any other actors in those roles, and a classic that came to me was The Breakfast Club.
Oh, nicely done.
Nice one.
She comes up with it, not you and I, the ones that grew up on the movies.
Yeah, right.
Oh, you're good. You're good. Nicely done, Brie. Yeah. That's hilarious, too, that you had to be the one.
Yeah, every character is just so well represented in those actors. Like, they really just gave it their all.
All right, real quick. Throw them in there. The Dirty Dozen from 1967. Lee Marvin, Charles Bronson, Telly Savalas, Ernest Borgnine, Donald Sutherland, Jim Brown. I mean, just an incredible one. And my dad might disown me if I don't mention The Magnificent Seven from 1960. Yul Brynner, Charles Bronson, Steve McQueen, James Corbin, Eli Wallach, Horace Buchholz, Robert Vaughn. Robert Vaughn is in that. Another great character actor.
Oh, man. Another one of my favorite old actors, Eli Wallach, who played an old man even when he was not that old.
he was still
really good at doing that.
Yeah, he really was. So I had to get those in there.
Yeah. So actually, that's it. That's the show. we can wrap it up.
Oh, that is so cool, Bria. Thank you so much for doing that. That was so much fun.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I feel like we could probably go at this for hours.
We could have.
Thank you for including me.
We could have.
Thank you so much for joining us.